I'm doing okay. It's getting a bit warmer, so it'll be carp fishing soon. Put the pike fishing gear away and the grayling gear and go carp fishing. So that's the way I run my year now. It used to be work and marriages and things, now fishing. It's sign of the times.
Well, no, that's interesting. So you take it easy now. It's about priorities for you now.
Yeah, it is. I sit and watch the television Saturday night and see Ant and Dec and all them people doing what I used to do and say, thank heavens, I'll have early night and go up and catch a 30-pound carp in the morning. Marvellous.
What does that feel like, seriously, watching people do what you used to do? Is it easy to let go?
It's easy for me to let go, I think. I'm not too sure, but I tell myself it's easy to let go, and I don't grieve too much. And then I go and work with other comics of my ilk, if you know what I mean. And they say, oh, why can't I get on the television? Oh, Jim, you should be doing this. And, you know, we're funnier than them. There's a lot of blokes from my school all going around thinking we're funnier than these younger comics. Well, you know, come on, guys. Everyone has a shelf life. You move on. Otherwise, we'd all be still watching Arthur Askey reruns.
It's difficult for any of us, though. In any line of work, it doesn't matter whether it's performing, doing what I do as a radio presenter, you know, it's someone that's a sales rep, whatever, you've always got someone younger
that's
coming
right
up behind you. And therefore, I do wonder about someone like you.
It's interesting because if you're a footballer, you know your game's up because your knees suddenly don't start doing what your brain tells them to do. But when you're like this, and to be truthful, you know, we all get together, me and the old fellas, we did a big charity show the other night, me, Jethro, Bobby Devereaux, all them old dinosaurs that you would call, sold the 3,000 seater out, people loving it, and then sit round afterwards and saying, you know, how come I don't understand a word that Michael McIntyre is talking about? And what is Eddie Izzard about? We do a bit of that with each other, but the difference is with me, I think, well, you know, good luck to him. I've had a smashing life, really, with a really mediocre act. You can't grumble.
You don't really think it was mediocre, do you?
Well, it was all right, and I think I wasn't any funnier than anybody else.
Does anyone know what's happened to Irish jokes? This is politically correctness, isn't it? Well, I'll tell you what, I went out with a group of golf tournament, and one said to me, had a man gone into a sandwich bar and he said, how much are the cheese rolls? He said, they're 2 for £1. How much is one? He said, 75p. He said, I'd have the other one. Fantastic. Isn't that good?
I just had good management, and I was around at the time. I fitted in to what was needed at the time. Young, cheeky, slightly controversial, but not really. I mean, in hindsight now, all the chalky stuff and the Nick thing is a bit embarrassing. I did what I did at the time, and people wouldn't have used me if A, I didn't make them money, and B, I didn't get them ratings. As soon as that stops and people move on, then you've got to go fishing, I'm afraid.
I was going to say there, I spoke to you, and you'll probably not remember, but I spoke to you about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and within 2 minutes of me speaking to you now, I think I hear a different person.
Yes, older, mate, 4 years older and fatter.
But you sound calmer, Jim.
Oh, I'm all right. Because, you know, my kids are grown up now. 4 years ago, I was paying absolute fortunes for the kids to go to school and, you know, maintenance and all those dreaded things. And now they're all happy. They're all in college. They're all working. They're all happy. I spoke to my son, Charlie, the other night, and I said, how are you, Charlie? He's at law college. He said, Dad, I'm happy. And I was really, really pleased. That was as good as me as a standing ovation at the London Palladium. So I'm deb chuffed with all that.
And did you feel the pressure a few years ago then?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, because you suddenly think, hang on, my career's over. Suddenly 1,000-seater theatres turn into 400 people in them. And you think, what am I going to do from here? And you suddenly think, oh, God, I can't fancy going on, or I'm frightened, I've got stage fright, I don't feel well. And it becomes a bit of a panic. What am I going to do? Exactly the same panic when everybody looks at wages going down and cost of living going up. It's exactly the same. But now I'm fine. You know, I've sort of turned the corner a bit.
You mentioned Chalky earlier on. I didn't. Yeah. You did. Do you regret that now?
No, I don't really regret it because I would have done exactly the same again because it was what was wanted of me.
It's come out the pub one night. He's all right now. Hey, everybody.
I didn't think that it caused any. No one come up to me and said, I don't think you should do that.
Yeah.
Only once, actually. Funny enough, having said that, years ago, up in... I used to do this funny black accent, so I went to school in Charlton, where all the black kids had West Indian accents, so it was quite good fun. And then I lived in Walworth Road in London, where the woman below me in the flat, she had a Barbadian accent, and they used to sing rather than talk, and I thought, this is great. All the comics I went and saw did various accents, and I thought, well, I'll pick up on this, and I did it and had a laugh. And then in 1977, I did the dreadful Blackpool summer season, and Little and Large's manager, now dead, said, we don't want you doing any of that black stuff. And I thought the reason he's saying that is because he's getting too many laughs. And it wasn't racist jokes. It was just telling jokes with a black person's accent in it, which was sort of funny, cartoon black man. And he said, and then someone said, well, look, why don't you just change it to make it sort of more personal, or you can make it someone that everyone can laugh at. Make a character. So this person, Chalky, come up. He was never called Chalky White, just Chalky, loosely based on my pal George Campbell at school. And that was that. And I still talk about Chalky now in retrospect, and did it do harm and did it not do harm during the bit in the act where we look back at comedy. And, it was made to make everybody laugh. Some of them were a bit cringe-making. But
If it was 1972 again, I'd do the
same thing again.
But given that it's 2012, and just in that theme of nearly where we've brought ourselves in this interview, which is, you know, an older, possibly wiser Jim Davidson, would you do it now?
Yeah, but well, there's no point, though, because no one's got a West Indian accent.
You were hammered for it, though, weren't you?
Only by some people. I mean, the ones that count. I mean, I'm still hammered by it, by all the people that think I'm... But the worst thing that happened to me was Bernard Manning dying, wasn't it? So all the lefty young boys all turned and said, that's the one we all hate now.
Where are you now then in your career? I know your new national tour, it kicks off when it's in March.
I'm terrified already. I'm nervous.
What will you be doing?
Well, I shall walk on stage and just see what the feel is like, and see what we want to talk about tonight. I'll talk about me, and I'll do some of the old favourites. And most of my act is normally about how I view the world through slightly tongue-in-the-cheek right-wing eyes, which is, I think, funny. I think bigotry is quite funny when it's not taken too seriously.
How do you view the world these days? What type of stuff are we talking about?
I sort of view it like Al Murray does, you know, the pub landlord, or Alf Garnett used to. I sort of view the world through eyes that shouldn't take things too seriously. Whenever there's a disaster, I think, can I make a routine out of this rather than write to my MP?
Do you admire any of the next generation of comedians, any of the young guys?
Admire them? How do you mean?
Is there anybody you really rate?
No.
None of them?
No. No, I mean, why would I? I don't watch comedians very often, and I see them on television. I don't understand them. How can you rate someone if they don't make you laugh? They don't make me laugh at all. I sat there, I watch Eddie Izzard, I swear to God, and think, what are people laughing at? Surely that's canned laughter, because this isn't funny. But then, that's my opinion. Comedy's personal, isn't it? I mean, good luck to Eddie Izzard. I'm sure he's brilliant and determined to be the most famous man in the world. But it just doesn't make me laugh. It doesn't make anyone I know laugh.
What about the likes of Ricky Gervais?
What about him? He's not a stand-up comic, though. He's rubbish at that. I mean, he'd be the first to admit it.
Do you rate him?
No. I don't like... It's cringe-making for me. I can't bear it.
So what do? You just turn the TV off?
No, I don't watch those programmes. I don't... First of all, I don't let the television just sit there and blare away. And mainly, you know, I've got a younger wife than me, so I have to watch all them girl programmes, you know, Dancing on Ice and all that other rubbish.
Yeah. And how's marriage this time, Jim?
Same as all the others, mate. I feel struggle.
Because it's been such a roller coaster of a life, hasn't it? Like, you've experienced so many different things.
Yeah, but many different wives. Wouldn't it be nice? All the guys sitting around thinking, oh, yeah, that must have cost a fortune, all those divorces. Yes, but money well spent.
What have you learned about love?
Nothing.
Come on. Nothing.
What love? What you can't learn anything about love. It just happens to you. It's like an headache. No, I don't think anyone learns anything about love. I think the best thing to do is ignore it totally.
And do you not feel vulnerable because it didn't work out so many times when you go into another marriage?
No, not really. No, you just turn the page and get on, didn't you? You got to think there's not just my idea about getting married. It's the other person's as well. You know, it's best to just get married rather than be nagged.
And do you still believe in it? Do you still believe that every time you get married, it will be forever?
Steve, I also believe in fairies.
But I'm serious. I'm serious. As you get older, you know, do you think to yourself, for goodness sake, I've been burnt here. I've been hurt before. And therefore, I'm more reluctant now. Or do you go with the flow?
I don't quite understand the question. Do you mean, will I put up with the wife getting on my nerves? You know, or do you think, I've had enough of this, I'm off? No, I'm one of them, I've had enough of this, I'm off. Life's too short.
Yeah.
You know, my wife and I, we don't have any children. We choose to be together. When that stops, goodbye. That's it. Simple as that. I know that sounds awful, but that's the way life is, really. You can't dress it up and say, oh, well, you're an horrible bloke. No wonder they're all horrible to you. But that horrible bloke happens to be me, and I have a life, and I have to choose who I want to be with. And they have to choose to want to be with me. I mean, I'm not the easiest person to live with. You ask anyone that lives with an entertainer, they're all mad.
Why? In what way are you mad?
Well, the same way, if you look at the celebrity thing that's on there, everybody wants to be a celebrity, don't they? Everyone wants to be a celebrity. And it's just a weird situation to be in, to want to show off, to live your life on Facebook, to live your life in OK Magazine. It's odd, and you can't have a normal life.
And so, therefore, what does it do to you, Jim, inside? This is interesting, because you're being honest about it. What does it do to you if you're in that world?
Well, it's great when you're in it. It's when you drop out of it. You suddenly turn into one of them, oh, why aren't I like it anymore?
And when you were one, you know, you were at the very, very top. You don't get bigger than where you were Saturday night primetime TV.
Yeah.
Were you getting a sense of fulfillment inside as a human being?
Yeah, I was, because I was earning a fortune. The only thing that was not fulfilling is the fact that I work for the BBC, God bless it, like you do, and it became very apparent to me that the people there didn't know how to make programs properly. It was a great big grey monster, and you were stuck there having to make a compromise and make a TV program that you could have done much better under different circumstances. That was the only thing with me.
It's hugely successful, though, wasn't it?
Well, it was successful. The Generation Game was successful.
Where are you from, Sam?
I was born in Sri Lanka.
Wow! Was you born in it when it was Ceylon?
Yes, I was.
And Sri Lanka means little pearl in the ocean or something, doesn't it?
Yeah,
great.
Roughly.
And what do you do, little pearl in the ocean, Sam?
I'm doing a law degree at the moment.
A law degree?
Yeah.
Don't do your voices and things, do you?
not personally.
Tell you what, they make a few bob, don't they, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got one permanently assigned to me now. You think I'd get a bit of discount and stuff like that, wouldn't you? Go to all of the things, but I'm not getting divorced. That's it now, I'm not getting divorced again. I'm going to find a woman who hates me and just give her £1 million.
But I always felt, all the time, I felt that the hierarchy, especially at the BBC, thought, God, do we really have to have him? You know, we really hope he becomes
unpopular. Well, they'd given you the gig, Jim, so they wanted you.
Not really. They gave me the gig because I could do the gig, and they didn't have anyone else to do it. And I was Flavour of the Month at the time, and I got them great ratings. But they didn't like me as a person. I voted Tory, for heaven's sake. That's not good for the BBC.
How do you know they didn't like you?
Because I know they didn't like me, mate, and you know that as well.
I don't. I'm genuinely asking you.
You'll have to believe me.
They're paying you big bucks. They're paying you massive amounts of money.
Big bucks. Yeah, they're paying everybody big bucks. They pay everybody. It's not their money, is it? You just grab it out of a big pot and give it to somebody. If they had to earn their money by getting their own revenue, then they'd be a little more careful with it, I think. Anyway, I shouldn't knock it. I had a very nice time. I mean, I was earning £1 million a year from doing Generation Game and things like that.
What were you spending your money on, Jim? Your million a year?
Well, first of all, you have tax. Well, I opted out of that later. But you have your percentage you have to pay your management, and then it costs quite a bit to do. And then there's the drinking and the women, and the rest you just fritter away. It's an old joke.
Pretty reckless, though, isn't it?
But great.
Waste that amount of money.
Fantastic. Lovely.
Come on, you don't mean that.
I do.
No, you don't.
I do. What is money for? Can't take it with you, can you?
Well, money's for when it all goes wrong, and they don't want you for having it there to keep yourself comfortable.
Yeah, but you never think that. You never think, what is comfortable? Do you think I'm going to be comfortable? Us people from show business are going to be comfortable sitting around in a £2 million house doing nothing. No, we want to be out fighting for our position. We want to be out there on stage. We want all those people saying, we really love you. There's nothing can compare with that.
I remember when I was talking to Sir Jimmy Savile before he died, I asked him if he had any regrets. And he said he had none.
Really?
Do you?
Yeah, I wish I'd have done things better, you know, as I say.
Like what?
If I knew I was going to live this long, I'd have taken more care of myself. That's the old joke, isn't it? And I think... actually, to be really honest, no, not real regrets. I'd have made different decisions. I wouldn't have got married to that third person. And I wouldn't have done... I'd have joined the Navy when I was 16 instead of pulling out of joining the Navy. Little things like that, but nothing really life-changing.
What, Jim, do you still want to achieve in life?
Oh, live to be 160.
Come on.
No, what do I want to achieve? 40-pound carp this summer?
Do you get more pleasure?
Time off and to see Charlton get into the championship.
Do you get more pleasure out of the fishing than you did the millions that you earned?
Yeah, of course I do.
Yeah.
You don't need the millions.
And there's the big question, why? For all of those people that are going through their 20s and 30s, Jim.
I need all those millions to get to where the state where I am now.
But here's the final question. I really enjoyed talking to you today.
Okay,
and I've much more enjoyed it this time than the last time when you and I were fighting, but that's all right.
I do remember that.
I don't think you do.
I do, because I just looked down. I thought, there's that bugger I had that argument
with. That's right.
And you've mellowed as well, by the way, Steve.
I have. I'll tell you what's happened to me. I've got older. I've got wiser.
How old are you, Steve, now?
I'm 38.
38?
Yeah.
That's not older.
No, but come on. 4 or 5, 6 years ago, whatever, I think I was...
You're not so opinionated as you were.
Yeah, I have.
You listen a bit more now. Yeah. Like I do, I listen, and then we'll both ignore one another and go to the pub for lunch.
And my final question then, for those people in their 20s or in their 30s, and they are striving to do what you once did, which is the big money and everything big and massive and all this kind of stuff. You said that you got a lot more out of fishing and that 40-pound carp than the millions.
Yeah.
Why? What's the lesson out of that with the benefit of hindsight now, Jim?
The lesson is to earn those millions and then get it out of your system, do it, spend it, get your family sorted out, make sure you're okay, then go and catch that 40-pound
carp. Why are the simple things in life? Why do they give you more
satisfaction?
Because
they're easy to do, aren't they? You don't have to worry about getting them wrong. The only thing you're worrying about catching a 40-pound carp is whether you're going to catch it or not, or whether you're going to land it. But to think about the old greasy pole of show business, or politics, or banking, or anything, you've just got to work hard and try and achieve as much as you possibly can without killing too many people on the way up, because those people, right, they're the ones that's going to be there. Probably another good reason I'm probably not on Saturday Night or I'm not on Titchmarsh anymore, because probably the executive producer of that Alan Titchmarsh program is probably that little stage manager we had in the Generation Game who I was horrible to. And they're now getting their own back, and good luck to them.
You weren't horrible to too many people,
were you? No, really, but, you know, I was one of these people that tell people they couldn't do their job if they couldn't.
I just wonder if people listening to you now in this interview, will they think to themselves, do you know what, there's a guy who's found himself.
Well,
eventually.
A little bit. I mean, these are always a bit off-putting, Steve, because you've always got your mind on what you're going to say, haven't you, really? I'm stuck here in this little room.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel much better with myself. I'm funnier on stage than I've ever been. I've got some good projects on the go. And last year is out the way. Oof, I'm so glad that has happened. And I don't even get bothered with politics anymore. I just sit back and watch it happen.
Really enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.